The thing is that when it comes down to EV, you have to understand this is an area that I study. I spend so much time milling over so much information when it comes to EV and spending a lot of time with people that own these things as well. And so when I'm going through these five top things that just plague the automotive industry when it comes to EV, you're going to find pretty quickly that there's some shockingly easy results that come out of just a little bit of research. And with that little bit of research, it can empower people, the customers, you, to be able to get into a car and have complete confidence that you're going to be able to drive these things many, many, many miles and be really happy with it. You see, because when I look at the electric vehicle and I hear people talk about the electric cars, especially when they're being negative about electric cars, I really have to stop, take pause. First off, I bite my tongue pretty hard in most of those conversations. And I ask myself pretty straight up, when it comes to a vehicle, if most people on the planet aren't car people, the vast majority of people want a vehicle for basic transportation, and they usually want, in the United States, all the features that go along with it, but the thing is that they really don't ever look under the hood, right? So habitually, we've fallen into this desire to maintain the status quo of simply just going to the gas station, filling the car up. Well, the thing is that when we take a look at what that means to somebody, especially let's use a middle class individual that is just squeaking by, not necessarily paycheck to paycheck, but they're pretty darn close, or somebody that is. When we look at this scenario, if they have children, if they have, let's say, the ability to just drive all over the place, an EV could change their life in some pretty profound ways. So we're gonna dive into the myths here. The top five that are usually brought up to me are the ones that I am gonna cover, and I'm gonna over time bring a few of these back up and add to them, because the pile of reasons why somebody makes up of, well, I don't want an electric vehicle because of what? What? Why don't you? Right? And so I'm going to break down a few of these. Hopefully we'll have a slightly better understanding of how we can handle in a professional and also fairly confident manner with customers or friends or family or whoever it might be, of how we can go ahead and talk about these big issues that people bring up when it comes to, I don't think electric vehicles will work. All right. So sit back, relax. I hope you enjoy this one. Here we go. The first one on our list here is going to be range anxiety. Now, range anxiety is that fear that you're going to be driving a vehicle and it's going to die like your cell phone on the side of the road. Well, is that possible? Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's possible. But is it also possible to do it in a gas car? Yeah, it's actually just as likely, if not, in most circumstances, more likely to happen in a gas car than in an EV. Now, the reason for this is that the average person in the United States, now this is a poll based off of, this is a CNN poll from earlier on, I think this year. And so this particular poll stated that the average person doesn't drive, I think it was something like 5% of people drive over 30 miles a day. And I had the research that says like even more, and as I started to learn that the average person really does not drive very much at all, it started to make me ask people right off the bat, hey, so you're anti-EV, I get it. I hear you. And that's fine, right? It's a free country, so they say. And so when it comes to you, why don't you like EVs? Well, they don't go very far. Okay, cool. So they don't go very far, but how many miles do you drive? Well, I drive about, 15, 20 miles a day. And I just kind of stared at him for a second, and I'm like, you, come on. So the thing is that most of these EVs today are breaking the 250 to 300 mile barrier fairly easily, and that's just going to progress forward. If any of us remember back in the day with those old cell phones, the huge, thick cell phones, they didn't last more than a few hours. And I'm kind of dating myself here, but and even that with the old backpack phones lasting a whole 15 minutes. But when it comes to these things, you would go ahead and pick up this phone, and it would barely do anything for you. It would only make calls. We were glad when it got text messages. But over time, the battery technology came light years ahead, right? Now they're thinner, they're faster. The electrons have the ability to do incredibly cool things inside of them. But the deal is that these things are far more reliable. Now you have a battery inside for example, new iPhone that is, I think, smaller than what I had in my old Razor way back in the day. Man, I miss that phone. And not to say that this one's bad, but The old one's indestructible. But when we go ahead and we take a look at the energy density and the science that goes into that, it has been evolving aggressively over the years because of small computing devices, right? Cell phones, laptops, stuff like that. Well, the cool part about this is that the car industry is going to rocket all of that forward. We're going to see probably in the next few years batteries that don't just last a day, batteries that last in like your laptop for, you know, a week, 2 weeks, a month. This is a reality now because battery capacity and battery storage is such a big topic now. But as far as range anxiety, in the United States, we have 115,000 gas pumps, and we have more, and that's all we have in the United States, just 115,000 off of PlugShare's website. I pulled that statistic. But when it comes to gas or charging cables, there are more charging cables right now than there are gas pumps that are out there. No joke. We don't have a charging problem. What we have is an education problem. And that education problem is just getting people out there to try it. But funny part about this is that myth number two here is charging infrastructure woes. With the charging infrastructure, perfect segue, the charging infrastructure is becoming more robust as the days go on, right? President Biden has injected tons of money on into there. Actually, there's so much money being flooded into the EV charging network across the country. The infrastructure is becoming stronger day by day by day. And we hear people all the time go, well, I never buy one because the infrastructure just isn't there. Well, the thing is that if you live locally and you don't really drive anywhere and you're going, let's say, for work, running a couple errands, and you're concerned about electrification, the thing is this, you're not going to go down to a local DC fast charge station and charge your car. You're just not. And the reason that you're not going to do that, and you're going to be motivated fairly quickly to figure out how to use the level twos around town. You're going to be motivated fairly quickly to install a level two charger inside your home, or you're going to be motivated to just start to understand how an EV works, how the culture works a little bit better. When it comes to these DC fast chargers, those chargers are typically going to be for people that are in transit. I mean, stop by one, talk to the people. You're going to find pretty quickly that you'll find a couple rideshare people, somebody that's on their way home real quick, just topping up before they can get home to their home charging unit. But the deal is that with those big DC fast chargers, on average, I've seen them cost somewhere around 38 cents per kilowatt. If you have a vehicle, let's say 100 kilowatt hour battery, you're looking at $38 to fill it up, which doesn't sound like a huge savings from a gas car, but keep in mind, larger SUVs have about 100 kilowatt hour battery in size. So you're still saving about $30 from a typical $3.50 per gallon fill up on a 25 to 30 gallon gas tank. So when we look at it from that perspective, you are saving a pretty significant amount of money. Now, when you switch to EV, if you drive a lot, and that's kind of the thing here, is that in order to make these things affordable, you have to be able to make up that cost in most circumstances with your fuel expenditure. So, but back to the infrastructure. So with infrastructure, we're seeing massive companies come on in, right? So we have Volkswagen's Electrify America, you have ChargePoint here, you have, and I could create a list a mile long and it would take all day. But the deal is that with the infrastructure in the United States, and I remember I sat down with somebody at a bar one day and having a beer, and he looks over and he goes, what do you do for a living? I said, well, I educate people on electric vehicles. At least that's what I'm doing this week. And he goes, they'll never take the infrastructure. And I said, dude, don't insult our linemen. I said, here in Florida, our linemen work incredibly hard on this infrastructure to keep it robust. Don't insult them. And he says, well, what if everybody plugs them at the same time? All right, cool. Since 2019, the EPA has reported a decline, a slight decline, but it is a decline in electrical usage throughout the United States. Now, how do you explain that, sir? And he was dumbfounded. He thought I was off my rocker. Here's the thing, is that even since EVs have been introduced, we are actually using less electricity. And this is because everybody's replacing all their light bulbs, they're updating their computers. And so I know I've said this before, but the difference in changing out all the light bulbs in the house, I know this was more of a forced thing. And I know a lot of people are like, well, I'll do anything to get my incandescent light bulb back. And that's fine. That's your prerogative, right? But it's a big difference to go from a full spectrum light at 100 watts all the way down to a single spectrum light at 5 watts, right? So, huge difference in what they can do. So as far as the grid is just fine. Get home, plug your car, and it's not going to use that much power at home. If If you'd like to know how much it will cost to charge a vehicle up, just take a 100 kilowatt hour battery and log on your local power company's webpage and take a look at their on and off peak hours. And I'll do a whole podcast just on the math behind this one. But you can find right on there a number that usually doesn't change for the whole year, or it'll change per season, but it's very consistent, unlike our gas prices here in the United States. You can simply go ahead, take that, let's say 11 cents per kilowatt, and see that it's going to cost you about $11 to top your vehicle all the way up, which means that if you have a 100 kilowatt hour battery and it's only going to cost you $11 to top your battery up, well, from your average SUV, that is a very considerable savings, considering your standard SUV today will still only go about 300 miles on a full tank of fuel. So when it comes to infrastructure, there's a lot going on with that. There's some incredible apps that you can find that are out there that will show you more than just one network. In the United States, we have over 20 networks here, and all of them are trying their hardest to supply the energy needed to get these cars up and running. So when it does come down to it, infrastructure is not something that we have to worry about. It is one of the biggest myths that people are willing to buy into simply because they just don't understand the grid. So now, the next one is charge times. Charge times is kind of tough because, not for nothing, if you came to me and said, hey man, I'm going to take your vehicle, I'm going to give you this one that takes like an hour to charge up, I'm going to look at you and go, yeah, but I need a lot more details, because if it's going to take an hour to go ahead and charge up, how far can I go? Well, if you tell me then, well, you can go 600 miles on a charge, done. I'll sit there for an hour, not a problem. Heck, 15 minutes is going to give me what I need. Awesome. A lot of vehicles that we're seeing hit the market today are 400 volt vehicles. Now, these 400 volt vehicles will typically take to go from 10 to 80%, about 45 to 50 minutes. Well, there's a few manufacturers out there that are going ahead and making vehicles at 800 volts or slightly higher. Now, these particular brands, take the Kias, the Hyundais, the Genesis of the world. And the reason that I point out that those guys is that they own some pretty high spots on the record books right now for fastest charging. So when we look at these, you're looking 10 to 80% and somewhere around the wheelhouse of 20-ish minutes. Now, the deal is that manufacturers now are starting to realize that they cannot go ahead and rely on charging infrastructure for the charging speed of their vehicle. So this was something that's going to improve in a very big way. But at the same time, the average person only drives about 30 miles a day or less, which means that when you plug into your wall at night, if you're just topping up, so you just top your battery up, on a level one charger, your average vehicle is going to garner about 40 miles of charge overnight. If that's the case, then you just get home every night and you plug your vehicle in and you got enough charge for the next day and you still have a battery that's full. Maybe occasionally you'll go on a road trip and you stop at your local DC fast charge station, charge your vehicle up, you sit there for a minute, but you get home and the annoyance of going to the gas station is no longer there. But that's the thing, is that the average person will listen to what they hear, just like every other human walking this earth, but they will flat out believe what they're being fed. One of the reasons that the United States has one of the lowest adoptions of EV out of any first world country is the simple fact that our media has been able to figure out exactly what to say to get people to believe them. And since we are, as much as we want to say we're an independent species, we very much take on a herd-like mentality. So if we are being told by people that are funneling millions, if not trillions of dollars on into a scheme to make the EV go away in the United States, we have to go ahead and pull out some logic and start to do some research and go, well, what's actually going on here? You see, EV does scare a lot of the oil industry, and that's okay. You know, even if we take a look at, for example, the Saudi oil fund funded the ability for Lucid to be able to do what they do, right? But at the same time, they haven't abandoned oil. But then we also see companies like BP, we see ExxonMobil, and we see all of these big titans of the oil industry now very much investing in renewables. But yet we don't hear the people that are paying for the media to go ahead and say what they're saying. We don't hear any of this news. Actually, we hear a lot of it is fairly stifled. I mean, heck, did you know that some ships right now are rolling out of their ports fully electrified? Or did you know that there's manufacturers out there? You know, there's Honda, they advertise this during Super Bowl, but there's also other manufacturers out there that are making EV planes, and get this, the pilots aren't scared to fly them. Huh. wow, if they're not scared to fly out of the air, then why are we so scared to be stranded on the side of the road, right? Thing is that when it comes to EV, being stranded on the side of the road means that you didn't pay attention to one of 4 to 5 to 7 indicators inside of your vehicle, flat out saying, hey, here's how far you can go. Well, here's more of a gauge that looks like a traditional fuel gauge. Maybe that'll help you. Well, here's a gauge that will go ahead and tell you something that looks like a color of a line that's being filled in by a gray line to denote range. Maybe that helps you there. Or here is this one singular number that tells you how far you can drive on your current charge before you need to find a charging station. The deal is that electric vehicles and manufacturers are supplying customers with so much info that's directly in their face, right on the dashboard, when they go ahead and they pick their brand new EV up, right? So as far as that goes, not a big deal. But back to charging time for brief blip on the radar. If you ask anybody that owns an EV that really knows how to take their car around town, and you just walk over to them, hey, how long does it take you to charge your car? They're either going to give you one of two answers. One is going to be the very direct one of, well, you know, if I plug it in, it takes about an hour to charge all the way up. All right, cool. So that tells somebody that, well, it takes an hour to charge your car, so you're going to be stuck sitting there for an hour. But that's not how people use them. If you are, let's say, within 10 miles of your home, and you have an EV, one of the latest and greatest, that go ahead and charge themselves up at 12 miles per minute, right? So one of these 800-volt jobbers that are out there. You're going to go ahead, if I only have 10 miles to go and I need to get to my home charging station, which costs a lot less than DC fast charger, I'm going to stop at the DC fast charger for, get this, 1 minute. Get 12 miles of charge, get myself home, plug my vehicle into my home. Or maybe I'm going to sit there for 3 minutes just for insurance in case I get home and I get distracted and forget to plug my car in and wake up in the morning and I don't have any juice. So deal is that we have never in the history of the automotive world gone ahead and looked into installing a gas filling station in your garage. Now you have that capability, and not for nothing, I really don't see what the big deal is now that we have maximum convenience. I mean, heck, you know, people started embracing this with their lawnmower. Why can't they do it with the car? You're right. You pop those batteries out and you can go ahead and mow your lawn. So now the other one here, number 4 on my article is cost concerns. And this is a big one because EVs, when they started to hit the market, they were incredibly expensive. And now when we take a look across the seas and we see one of the biggest competitors that's out there, massive juggernaut. If you haven't heard of them, they're called BYD. This company has so many EV variants. And a lot of them are actually kind of cool. I don't understand their naming scheme, but I'm sure somebody over there gets it. But when you take a look at these, they are now going ahead and threatening the rest of the world, the rest of the automotive industry, with a $10,000 EV. Now, this vehicle is a subcompact. It's a very tiny little thing. But from what I've heard about BYD's build quality, it's not a bad car. So at least projected to be a bad car. So if it goes along with the build quality of their others, well, no, we'll see what they come up with. But when it comes down to those cost concerns, being able to build a quality car at a lower price is tough in the gas market. You need to literally own parts of the supply chain in order to go ahead and make a vehicle that is so value oriented that you beat the rest of the industry out, right? So when we look at battery, though, this is all about being able to resource your lithium, your cobalt, your nickel, or whatever you are putting into that battery cocktail to make it as awesome as it is. You are going ahead and trying to find ways to cut the cost of that big honking battery or develop ways on your own to make the energy density of that battery far better than the rest. Therefore, you can use less material. The vehicle will cost less. And in addition to that, you can pack more value on into your car. So with that, when you look at the build capabilities of, let's say, a Tesla out there, right? Elon wasn't dumb when he went ahead and said, this is how we're going to make this car. And when you look at the interior, and I know I'm minimizing a lot of what a Tesla is, but it's a very smart way to build a car, is that they're built pretty much all the same exact way with the same exact components. And obviously, options can go in there and accessories and all that fun stuff. But you have one screen that's in the center. You have one wheel that's, on the left or the right. You have one dashboard, and the thing doesn't really change. And by going ahead and making vehicles in a very easy to manufacture way that don't have a whole ton of variety from one vehicle to the next, As far as how complicated it'll be to build, you can make those cars fairly cost effective. And so this is one of the ways that Tesla can go ahead and beat the industry by offering up incentives or adjusting their price so quickly to meet industry demand. Now, on the other end of that, when you have brands that are struggling to get in the EV, right, struggling to be successful, and I could pick on quite a few of the big ones right now that in my personal opinion have just been lazy. But when you have these brands that are not very innovative, that are building batteries that don't even heat themselves in the winter, I mean, come on, guys. When you have these brands that are struggling with EV, we find that they contract with other manufacturers. And as they contract with other manufacturers, that manufacturer wants their cut in order to supply the part in order to build the car. Now, even if it's a separate battery manufacturer, if it's a separate charge unit manufacturer, if it's a separate, I don't know, even tire, if you look at tire manufacturers. So when you take a look at these, if the manufacturer of that vehicle is not designing their own car, and they're not designing their own parts, they're not engineering their own parts, this will all of a sudden make the cost of that vehicle inflate in a very big way, right? Because they can't cut out the middle person. So with cost concerns, though, as energy density starts to improve, as companies like Tesla with their open patents go ahead and create better, more sustainable designs, what we're going to find pretty quickly is that people will go ahead and start to flock to these brands that have the ability to go further with a lighter weight vehicle. And so, again, back to cell phones, back in the day, the old nickel metal hydride battery that you would have in your car, but that old nickel battery that you would have in your cell phone, that battery has decreased over time quite substantially. So now you have a phone that fits in your pocket, and half the time we're looking for it, and it's just seriously like in our back pocket or lost between the couch cushions. So where you're going to do that with your old phones? So over time, these vehicles will come down dramatically in price, and hopefully without sacrificing a whole lot of range. So as far as that goes, keep your eye on the smaller vehicle market out there, because in about the next year or so, you're going to see a few companies rip a Band-Aid right off of that, and they're all of a sudden going to flood the market, and it's going to be awesome. You're going to see these little EVs running out all over the place. I can't wait. It's going to be great. So now the next one is battery woes. Number five, this particular one, battery woes, is kind of woesome, so to speak. The deal is that people tend to take battery woes in 50 different directions. So I'm going to hit on two of them right now. One is recycling, and then the other one is just the people that all of a sudden have become eco-conscious warriors. Now, I think these people are hilarious, because when it comes to a good variety of people, or a fairly specific type of person, all of a sudden you have this person that goes, well, I don't want, you know, I'll stick with my V8. I don't want to go ahead and get an electric car. They're bad for the environment. Okay, listen, buddy, you really got to break this one down for me. How are they bad for the environment? Well, their carbon footprint is a lot bigger than a gas model vehicle. Okay, that, you know, it's at production, right? Yeah. But you know, I'd rather have my V8. Okay, I get it. Preferences for all. But here's the thing. When did you become eco-conscious? When did you care about the environment? Because as I look out there, you have a big old jacked-up truck in your driveway that I've seen you roll coal in 500 times. And then in addition to that, I see that V8 right next to it, right there, and that gorgeous, gorgeous Mustang. So you tell me when eco-conscious reigned on in. Right. And as you push this a little bit more, all of a sudden this person will start to complain about, you know, wind turbines in Texas and things like that. And then how solar panels don't work when it's snowing. Yeah, no kidding. But the thing is that we need to progress forward. We need to have that progress that makes us a better civilization, better human civilization. So when we look at the carbon footprint, and I ran the math, and I told you that I'd give you the math at some point here, and I'm planning on creating a whole podcast just on the math behind batteries. Super exciting one coming up. That particular math stated that an average vehicle with a 20-gallon gas tank filling up at, I think I used $4 per gallon. That particular vehicle, and I guess the money's irrelevant there, but it has a 20-gallon gas tank, and in order for that vehicle being the exact same price and everything as a ICE-powered car, an internal combustion engine car, that gas-powered vehicle will excel past the EV's carbon footprint right around its 16th tank. So at its 16th tank, And these are all average numbers. I just pulled them all off Google. Your average gas car passes an EV for carbon footprint. Now, you will, again, have that EV or that gas-powered owner that'll go, well, your vehicle charges off a coal plant. Well, so do your lights, bud. Listen, we're not all perfect. We all just try to do our part. But even the coal plant charging up my vehicle doesn't produce the carbon emissions that go beyond what your vehicle does when it's burning gas going down the road. And, you know, I mean, don't go ahead and come at me, bro, because the deal is that even then, I could go ahead and pull out a video camera and record your car going down the road, blasting, you know, black stuff all over the place. So when it comes down to it, let's not be those eco-conscious warriors if it's just not actually who we are. Because not for nothing, you're kind of making yourself look like a supreme idiot when you go ahead and do that. Don't do it. Don't do it, right? Take a look at it from the level of all of us on the ground and go, you know what? Yeah, these things are better for the environment. Now, the cool part about this, though, is that there will become a time. And it's not going to be tomorrow, it's not going to be next year, or even the next 10 years, but there will become a time that the electric vehicle market will do something that the gas market never had the ability to do. And that's the ability to get to the point where there's enough battery-powered vehicles on the road, and there's enough lithium or whatever mineral we will be using in the future that is currently in recycling, that we won't have to dig much of anything up. And so this is something that a lot of us, when we look down the road, the end game is absolutely awesome. Simply being able to go ahead and say, hey, you know what? Yeah, our carbon footprint is, you know, almost negative if it was even possible, because the vast majority of the vehicle that we have was made out of materials that could be recycled. And so we're seeing large recyclers that have already taken laptops and computer batteries, now taking car batteries, breaking them on down. And just so everybody knows, EVs are not sent to rot in the middle of nowhere. The batteries are removed, the batteries are sold off. It's one of the easiest parts for a junkyard to be able to go ahead and flip, is simply go ahead, get the battery, and flip it on over to a recycler, and they instantly made a lot of money. So when it comes down to recycling of these things, we'll get to the point where things like lithium and nickel, forever chemicals that can be reused millions of times over, are just gonna be recycled and put into another car. And that obviously leads into the idea of battery swapping and things like that in the future, but we'll see what the industry comes down to. Now, the other one that I wanted to hit on here was longevity of these batteries. Now, the longevity of these batteries is insanity. I think it was Tesla that put forth an environmental impact report that stated that at 200,000 miles, their batteries degraded 12%. So let's think this through real quick. Your average gas vehicle, once it hits 2,000 miles, has a degradation of right about 30 to 37%. It's all about how you took care of the vehicle. If that's the case, that basically means that and we're going to base everything on, I can only go 100 miles in both vehicles. So that basically means that the electric vehicle in 200,000 miles lost 12 miles of range. Okay, well, what about the gas car? So the gas car in 200,000 miles would go ahead and lose 37% efficiency, meaning that the average person that doesn't really take care of their car very well is now getting 37% less fuel efficiency, 37% less power, and you have wear and tear going on in an internal combustion engine that far outweighs the wear and tear going on inside of an electric motor, which is darn near frictionless. So when we take a look at the longevity of what these things can do, sure, you will have manufacturers that will build a bad batch. You will have a battery that will die here and there. That's going to happen. We have engines fall out of cars all the time. I mean, heck, I went down the road the other day and I'm watching a brand new vehicle in front of me just shoot antifreeze all over my windshield, right? It wasn't too terribly happy. That stuff is a real pain to clean up. But the thing is that this is all based on the anxieties of something new, something different. It's also very politically motivated, and I'm going to stay out of that completely, but just to touch on in there just a little bit, when you have somebody that is trying to get their fans all riled up, and let's call it exactly that, their fans all riled up, and they go ahead and say something to simply get them to just get that rah-rah going of, when I am president, I'll kill all EVs. I'm sorry. It simply just cannot happen, right? We got to get off of this, because when it comes down to EV, these vehicles are faster. These vehicles are more fun to drive. They're more well-balanced. They handle better. From a sports car perspective, they smash almost all the other sports cars out of the water. I mean, heck, if you take a look at that new Tesla Roadster design, if it comes to fruition or not, I'm interested. I mean, they're talking about cold air thrusters under the car and behind the vehicle, making the vehicle, as Elon said, not technically a car, but 0 to 60 in under a second. That's pretty sweet, right? So with these, in the future, as soon as we figure out how to design a decent transmission for these things, you'll have vehicles that will be able to tow far more weight, go far further. So anyways, I can get down a whole rabbit hole on all of this EV negativity, but the deal is with all of this stuff is that we're all world warriors in one way or another. We all have things that we need in a vehicle, but those things are about to go ahead and give us maximum comfort, right? The ability for you to simply get home, plug your car in, it takes 3 to 5 seconds. Grab a cable, plug it into your car, go inside, not worry about anything. And then you come back out, you unplug your vehicle, and you go to work. And if you're that person that wants to follow up with, well, what about my utility bill? Just go ahead and note that you just took your first step to turn that fuel pump essentially into an ATM machine, because you don't have to supply your vehicle with a type of fuel that costs a small fortune, right? The vast majority of us, when we compare the two, realize pretty fast that a gas car is actually a luxury. Most of us can't afford or don't want to, once we realize what's going on, we can't afford the high cost of gas anymore, right? When there's another incredibly viable alternative out there. So anyways, that is this week. Tried to keep it nice and short. Last week's on Ford was about an hour long. But as far as that goes, if anybody has any questions, just simply shoot me a note at andrew@autonerd.com. Have a great day, everybody. I will talk to you all next week. Bye.